We're holding on the top line of page 92. Ki havu mintu rabbanon. For those using other editions, it would be the middle of Os Samach Ches. It's with the middle of Daf Yud Zayin. Middle of Daf Yud Zayin of Brachos. It would be in the middle of Os Samach Ches of Ein Yaakov. We were talking about various things that different Chachamim said. Messages for life, messages for how a Yid should live his life, things about Olam Haba, things about the special schos of women. So now more related to that, about brachas that the Chachamim would give each other. The Gemara says, Ki havu miftiri rabbonin mibei Rab Ami, when the Chachamim were taking leave from the yeshiva of Rab Ami, v'ami lo mibei Rab Chanina, or others say from the yeshiva of Rab Chanina, Amri lehochi, they would say as follows. So Rashi says, Miftiri Rabbanan means zemizeh. They're taking leave of each other. Each one is going to be going back to his country or to his town or whatever. So before they left, they would give each other the following bracha. On the other hand, the lashon that we have here, Amri Lei Hachi, seems to imply more that this is what they would say as a bracha to the Rashi Shiva, Rab Ami or Rab Chanin. Anyway, the bracha was, Olam chatira b'chayecha, may you see your world in during your lifetime, and in your world, what's the real world of a tzaddik is Olam Haba. So you should have the schus to see a semblance of Olam Haba already in this world. Eitz Yosef also points out that like this, you have, as the Gemara is going to discuss soon, you have very high level tzaddikim who they're not even sustained from Hashem's chesed in this world, they deserve it. So therefore, in other words, Olam Chatira B'Chayecha would mean you should be on the level where what you're enjoying in this world is the payrus of your Olam Haba, rather than Hashem having to give it to you as a chesed, because you're actually of the caliber to actually deserve what Hashem gives you. V'achrischa L'Chayecha Olam Haba, and your future should be for Olam Haba. And you hope for generations upon generations, which means Maharsha says, in other words, that you should have what to look forward to, not only in Olam Haba, as in where your neshama goes after 120, but also for your Mosa Mashiach and also for Tchias Mesim, that all of those you should have coming to you. Then they continue. Libcha Yehagetvuna, while you're in, while, so that dur, it means the two generations, the time of Mashiach and the time of Tchias HaMesim. Libcha Yehagetvuna, your heart should be thinking of thoughts of understanding of Torah. Picha Yedaber Chochmos, your mouth should be speaking the wisdom of Torah. So Rashi explains on all this that they were saying Beloshen Bracha, they were saying all this Beloshen Bracha. Now, why does Rashi have to mention that point? Obviously, what else would it be other than a bracha? But Tzlach explains, because in particular, the expression picha yadaber chochmos is similar to, but not identical to, a pasuk in Tehillim. In Kapitel Mem Tes, in Tehillim, we have the line pi yadaber chochmos. So therefore, so you're going to say, how are you allowed to change the words of a pasuk? And the answer is, because they're not actually quoting the pasuk, they're saying it as a bracha. They continue, your tongue should be moving and then should be vibrating with songs of praise to Hashem. Your eyelids should be looking straight ahead for you, meaning that Rashi says that you should be looking in the Torah kahalacha, the proper way. You should be understanding the Torah the way it's meant to be understood. Your eyes should shine with the light of the Torah. Your face should glow like the glow of the heavens. Your lips should be giving forth like Meloshin Neveya, like to well forth das with understanding. And your kidneys, which throughout the Gemara and throughout Divrei Chazal, we use the kidneys are used as the part of a person's mentality that gives him the ideas that filter, so to speak, like the ideas, the way the kidneys in the body filter out the blood. So the same way the metaphorical kidneys filter a person's thoughts to determine what's good and what's not good. So kil yasecha, your kidneys, tal loizna meisharim, should be happy with the straight way that you're learning and you're doing the straight way, the way Hashem wants. Ufal mecha, your roots of lishmaya, divrei atik yoimin, and your feet should be running to hear the words of atik yoimin, which means Hashem. So they've mentioned a whole bunch of different body parts over here. Maharsha explains, we're focusing on all the body parts that have to do with learning Torah. So the feet run to learn Torah, the eyes look at the Sfarim, the mouth speaks it, and so on and so forth. And the face shines Chochmas Adam Torah Ponav, as the pasuk says. On the other hand, they conspicuously left out the hands because the hands are not really involved in Talmud Torah. Those are more involved in Maisa Mitzvahs. And here they're benching each other, or they're benching the Rosh Hashiva, that he should have the schus to continue learning Torah. So therefore, they didn't mention the hands. Another one, Kiyaf Miftarim Bet Abonin Mibeir of Chista, when the Chachamim were taking leave from the Yeshiva of Rav Chista, Ra'amilom Mibeir of Shmuel Ban Achmeni, or others say it was from the Yeshiva of Rav Shmuel Ban Achmeni, Omru Leihachi, they would say to their Rosh Yeshiva the following bracha, the Pasuk and Tilim, Alufenu Misubalim, literally Alufenu means like our oxen, Misubalim, are loaded up with heavy burdens. But as the Gemara is going to say soon, it's a metaphor for the great Tamar Chachamim and Tzaddikim who support the whole world with their schus. So therefore, that was the bracha that they gave them. And the Gemara teaches out phrase by phrase what was the bracha. Alufenu Mesubalim, Rav Shmuel. So Rav and Shmuel argue about that particular phrase, Alufenu Mesubalim. It's at the end of Kapitel Kuf Mem Dalet and Tilim. So Va'amrila Rab Yechan and Rab Elazar. Others say Rab Yechan and Rab Elazar were the ones who argued about the deeper meaning of that pasuk. Chad Omer Alufenu Batoro Umasabolim Mitzvahs. One of them, between Rav and Shmuel, and between Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar, says that Alufenu. So the word again, the word Aluf can be a very rare word for oxen, or that carry heavy burdens. But also, on the other hand, Aluf can mean a leader. You have you have Alufei Esav, and then Lahavdor, you have Alufim among the Torah. So they're Alufenu, there are leaders as far as Torah, Umasabolim the mitzvahs, and they're carrying a heavy burden of mitzvahs, and they do all the mitzvahs. So there are leaders in learning Torah, and there are Misubolim, they're carrying the burden of doing as many mitzvahs as possible. But Chadama, Alufenu, Batorah over mitzvahs, the other one says they're Alufenu as far as that they do Torah and mitzvahs, Umasubolim be Yisurim, and the Misubolim refers to the fact that they're loaded up with Yisurim. And with that, they're machaper for the world, like we learned earlier in the perek about Yisurim Shalav. So Marsha explains, if we say that Alufenu refers to teaching Torah, we find, for example, that David calls Achitofel Alufi Umiudoi, my Rebbe and my confidant. So and then with Subolim B'mitzvahs, we find by the bracha to Yisachar, by Yet Shichmei Lispo, that he bent his shoulder to the burden of mitzvahs of helping the Jewish people do mitzvahs. Particularly, we know that Bnei Yisachar were experts at calculating the calendar so that they know to do the mitzvahs at the proper time. If you say Mesubolim B'Yisurim, then you have the pasuk Machivenu Svolam talking about the tzaddik, or to a certain extent talking about the Jewish people collectively, that they bear the burden of the pains of the rest of the rest of the Jewish people, or of the rest of the world in general. So that's the Alufenu Mesubolim. That's that part of the bracha. So they're complimenting their Rebbeim, who are Alufenu and Mesubolim, and they bear this heaviest burden, which, you know, one idea of it is, in other words, the point is, you know, you have in the wider Goyish world, it's not always like that. Very often you have the leaders are dafka the ones, you know, who figure that they can get away with everything. They don't have to, you know, laws are for the little people in the Zuck, you know. So here we're saying, on the contrary, our Alufenu don't act that way. They take on the heaviest burdens for themselves. Then they continue. So now the whole pasuk goes, Alufenu Mesubolim, Ein Peretz Ve'ein Yotzes Ve'ein Tzvacha B'chor V'sein. So now, what is the second half of that pasuk? What's the bracha in it that these Talmidim of Rav Chista's or Rav Shmuel Ben Achmeni's are telling their Rebbeim? They say, Ein Peretz, when the pasuk continues, there should be no breach. That means, Shaloi Tehei Sayatenu Kesayate Shoshol Sheyotzen Menu Doeg Hadoin. Our group of Talmid Chachamim should not be like the group of Shol's Talmidim, who Doyegad Doimi ended up coming from them, and he was a tremendous Rosh. Why is he referred to as Peretz? Because in particular, Marsha explains, he killed Noiv Irakoinim. So therefore, he made a terrible breach in the Jewish people. And therefore, for that reason, the word Peretz refers to him. Eitz Yosef gives a different reason. We know from the Gemara in Yevamos that he was the one particularly who brought up the point that David is descended from Rus HaMoyavia, and therefore that he ought to be posel Lavan HaKohol. So he wanted to make a breach and make it that David is not part of the fence, not part of the fenced in Jewish people, but rather belongs to someplace else. So that's why he's called Ein Peretz. the ein yoitzes, and when they continue, there should be no going out. That means shaloi tehe sayatenu kisayate shol David sheyatzimena achitoyfel. Our group of chachamim should not be like the group of David where achitoyfel came out of it. Where again, both doyeg and achitoyfel, they were both big tamid chachamim, but unfortunately, they had bad midas and they were balei lashon hara and had other problems, and they both are among the people who are listed that they lost their place in Adam Abba. So why is Achitofel referred to as Yotzes? So Marashah explains, because after all, Yotzim in Olam, he ended up committing suicide when he gave advice. So the Sukkim describe in Shmuel and Sefer Shmuel, he gave advice. He went over to Avshalom's side when Avshalom revolted against David, and then Achitofel joined him. And then at one point he realized that Avshalom is definitely going to lose the war. He had given excellent advice about how they could get rid of David once and for all. Avshalom didn't accept it because it was counter advice from Koshai Arki. So Achitofel realized they're not going to get anywhere, and he went and committed suicide. So therefore, he's called Yotzes, that he went out. He's gone from the world. Eitz Yosef points out another reason as well. In particular, why Yotzes v'loshen Nekeva? So he says, because what first turned Achitofel against David anyway? Achitofel's granddaughter was Bathsheba. So now, when David took Bathsheba in this way that seemingly was illegal, we know Kol Ha'Emer David Chota Einei Alatoya, but still it was very questionable. Then from then on, Achitofel had a grudge against David, and now when Avshalom is revolting against David, then he grabbed the opportunity. In fact, also Eitz Yosef brings from a Gemara that says that, not so much. I mean, it is true that he had it against him because of the matter of Bathsheba. But actually, what Eitz Yosef says is something different. The very fact that Achitofel first thought, what made him think to join a revolt against David? What made him think such a revolt is going to be successful anyway? It's because he saw with Ruach HaKodesh, he saw a simon that represented that he's going to have descendants who are kings. So he figured, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to join Avshalom's side. He'll overthrow David and kill him and become the king. Sooner or later, the people will realize that Avshalom is a lowlife and they're going to want to be rid of him. Then at that point, I'm in position. I'll become the next king. Meanwhile, he didn't realize that what he saw with Ruach HaKodesh was true, but it wasn't that he himself was going to be the king. It's that because Bathsheba was his granddaughter, therefore his great-grandson Shlomo is going to be the king. And all the future kings are going to be descended from him. So his mistake to begin with was because of a woman, because of Yotzes, it was because of a woman, because of Bathsheba, his daughter, his granddaughter, and that's why we use the word Yotzes in the plural. With that said, though, so now all of this is the girsa we have in front of us. Tosfos actually says the other way around. Tosfos prefers to say that Peretz refers to Achitofel because he made a pirtza in Malchus Beis David. He breached open Malchus Beis David by joining the rebellion, and Yotzes would be Doeg because Yotzel Latarbus Ra, he went off into bad ways. He ended up, the Gemara tells in Sanhedrin how he ended up forgetting his Torah and started teaching Apikorsus, and his neshama was burnt, and so on and so forth. On the other hand, Marashah says, the Girsa that we have in front of us is preferable because then it puts them in the order of the generations. Doeg was before Achitofel. Doeg was in Shaul's times, and he didn't even, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, actually, he didn't even live to see Achitofel, because both of them died at age 33 or 34. David was king for 40 years, and Avshalom's revolt broke out in his 35th or 36th year of kingship. So Achitofel wasn't even born until a couple of years after David was king. Meanwhile, Doeg had been around in Shaul's times, and he was the one, according to some opinions, he's actually the one that who came and reported to David that Shaul was about to commit suicide on the battlefield, and I finished him off, and David had him executed. So they never actually saw each other. So therefore, Marashah says it's preferable to have the way the Girsa we have over here, that Peretz refers to Doeg, and Tzvach and Yotzes refers to Achitofel, because that puts them in chronological order. Anyway, that's a different buzz. Yeah, that's how we know that none of them lived to be 35, right? Then when it says Ve'ein Tzvacha, so the pasuk finishes off Ve'ein Tzvacha b'chaveseinu, there should be no crying out in our streets. So Ve'ein Tzvacha means Shaloi tehei sayotenu kisayayte shalod lisha shuyatzim menu gechazi. We should not be like the group of chachamim who learned by Elisha where gechazi came out of it. And why is he called Tzvacha? So first of all, Because so first of all, Tosfos says because he was a mitzvah, he eventually became a mitzvah. A mitzvah, we know, has to call out tomei, tomei yikra. The tomei has to call out tomei. So therefore, he's very appropriately described with the word svacha, crying out. Eitz Yosef makes a different point over here, which is also that the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that after Elisha kicked out Gehazi, which, by the way, the Gemara criticizes him for that, he shouldn't have pushed him away, he shouldn't have rejected him completely, he should have given him a chance. But anyway, the point is, eventually he went off the Tigris Ra. The Gemara says over there, one thing he did, he took one of the Egle HaZahav that Yerovam had set up 100 years earlier. He engraved the name of Hashem inside the mouth of the statue, and from then on it was calling out Anoichi and Lo Yirecha. So that caused a lot more people to believe, hey, this really is a godly thing, and we should worship it. So in that way, it was Choto Machdias Rabin. So therefore, again, the word Svacha, crying out, describes him very appropriately, where he caused the Egel Azohok to cry out like that and to claim that it's a god. Anyway, so now we're saying the Ein Svacha that we daven and we bench you, our Rebbe, that you shouldn't have somebody like that in our group. And when we finish off Berchove Senu in our streets, also Marsha says another reason why Svacha refers to Gehazi. Because what happened, we have the story with the Isha Ashunamis this week's Haftarah, where the Isha Ashunamis comes to Elisha, you need to revive my baby. So Elisha tells Gehazi, take my staff and go to her house and put it on the boy's face, and that'll accomplish Chesed Meisim. But he tells him, ki varecha ish lo sanenu, if anybody says hello to you, don't answer him back, etc. Don't talk to anybody. Meanwhile, what did Gehazi do? The Medrash says that no, as he's going, he says hello to everybody. Everybody asks him, where are you going? I'm going to be Mechaya Meisim and making fun of it. So he was tzvacha, he was calling out and making a pirsum of the thing, which he shouldn't, and therefore Taka didn't work, and eventually Elisha had to go there himself and do the job.
He was making lizanos of his Rebbe,
the pashtus, and of the whole concept that you could accomplish Chesed Meisim with a staff, yeah.
Or you saying this is the greatness of his
Rebbe? I mean, we can be melamed zchus on him and say that maybe he thought that he's publicizing the nest and that way it'll make a bigger Kiddush Hashem. But still, if Elisha told him, don't say anything, then it's not his business to start making these chashbonos. Anyway, so that's another reason why Tzvacha refers to him. And Berchove Senu, when we say there shouldn't be anything in our streets, that means Shaloyia Beinenu or Lonu Ben or Talmud, we should not have a son or Talmud, Shemak Diach Tapshilei Barabim, who burns his food in public, which is a Gemara expression, meaning that he takes things of Torah and misuses them and teaches them wrongly and makes apikursish ideas out of them. Uncensored Gemaras have also the additional words, kigoin Yeshu HaNotzri. An example of that is Yeshu HaNotzri, and of course, you know, whether that Yeshu HaNotzri is the same one that you can find on all the street corners, that itself is a big discussion among the Rishonim, whether it is the same one or whether it's taka a different one. Anyway, but he's an example of somebody who was Makdiach Tafshir Barabim, because you have also the story in Sanhedrin over there, again, in the uncensored Gemaras, that he was a Talmud of Yeshua ben Prachya and went off the Derech and was Mesis and Madiach and so forth. So therefore, that's he's described as Berchove Sein. Okay, another topic, which is kind of going to relate to what we said before. We talked before about where Eitz Yosef said that it meant, in particular, it means you should be on the level of the great tzaddikim who don't need to receive from Hashem's chesed. They're actually receiving from the peiros of their olam haba. So now let's talk about that level of tzaddikim. The pasuk says in Yeshaya, "Shimuei lai abirei leiv horchokim mitzdaka." The Navi says, "Listen to me, you abirei leiv," which can mean you strong, stout-hearted people, "horchokim mitzdaka," who are far away from tzedakah. So, what does that mean? Rabu Shmuel. So again, Rab and Shmuel argue on the meaning of that. That's another reason why we're bringing it over here, because we had one thing that Rabu Shmuel, or some say Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lazar argued about. Va'amilo Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lazar, Chad Omer. What it is most of the world is sustained through Hashem's tzedakah. They wouldn't deserve if they were to be sustained based on what they deserve, then very, very few people would live up to that. So therefore, they're sustained by Hashem's tzedakah. But here we're talking about very high level tzaddikim who are sustained by their force. So Abir literally means a strong person. In other words, they, so to speak, have the right to demand of Hashem that he should take care of them, and he does because of their great level of tzidkus. So Yad Yosef teaches out, in other words, if you have a person needs to be sustained by Hashem's midas rachamim, then it's not called bizroya. If midas adin agrees that the person deserves it, then that can be called nizon and bizroya. Zroya is another word for din, so here midas adin agrees to it as well. Interesting thing, actually, there's some place in the Siddurim Dach where it talks about, we know there's the idea that the biyud nivra olam haba behed nivra olam hazeh. So there's a maimer, and then the Siddurim Dach, where the Alter Rebbe develops the idea that yud is related to gvura and hey to chesed, and therefore, in other words, it means that olam haba is a world of gvura. But we're saying, in other words, in the sense that anybody who has a chelik olam haba is mitzad gvura, like we're saying over here, midas gvura, midas din, agrees that they have the right to it. It's not just that Hashem is giving them olam haba mitzad chesed; they actually have earned it. So that's one. The idach or the chad omer, the other one between Rab and Shmuel, or between Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar, says kol ha'olam kula nizon b'schusam. What it means is the whole rest of the world is sustained in the schus of these high level tzaddikim. Behem afilu b'schusam b'schus atzmon ein nizonin. They're not even sustained with their own schus. They live very poor lives, as in fact Rabbi Elazar himself was an example of that. But nevertheless, the whole world is sustained in their schus. So that's what we mean. In other words, according to the first explanation, we're saying hodachoykin mitzdaka. So according to both explanations, we're saying abirei lev means they're strong people. They have a strong schus by Hashem. But according to the first explanation, they're rechoykin mitzdaka in the sense they do receive a shefa from Hashem, but not through tzedakah, but rather through midas adin, because they deserve it. And according to the other one, they're rechoykin mitzdaka, their Hashem is not giving them his tzedakah, and Hashem, in fact, is giving them next to nothing, but they're still, that through their schus, the entire rest of the world is being sustained. Kidder of Yehuda Amar Rab. And this is like what Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rab. The Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab. B'chol yom yom basko yotzes mehar chodev. Every day of a basko comes out from har chodev, from har Sinai. But in medicine, it announces, kol ha'olam kula nizan b'shvil chanina b'ni. The entire world is sustained because of my son Chanina. So this is in the time when Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa was alive, and he was the tzaddik in whose host the whole world is sustained. In later times, of course, it would be other tzaddik. But Chanina bni dialed kav choruvim erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos. Meanwhile, my son Chanina, he finds it enough to have one kav of carobs, which carobs are not even normal food. You have it's like the next thing up from Michael Behema, from one erev Shabbos to the next erev Shabbos. That's what he and his family would live on. So that's what we mean. In other words, that the rechoyk and mitzdaka, that Hashem is not giving them its tzedakah generously. They're living very poor and very difficult lives. And nevertheless, the whole rest of the world is sustained in their schus. So there's an explanation from the Baal Shem Tov that the deeper meaning of the word bishvil means in the path. Because Reb Chanina ben Dosa's avoda, that opens up a path, that opens up a shvil for shefa for the whole rest of the world. There's places in Chassidus where it talks about the deeper idea behind that he has this kav charuvin. You have the Gemara talks about in a couple of places the idea that chad charuv or trei charuv. You have 6,000 years of the world as we know it, and then there's 1,000 or 2,000 years that are described as charuv, that the world is going to be destroyed. We're not really destroyed, but brought to such an immensely high level compared to what it is now that we won't even recognize it as a world. So therefore, so in that sense, in other words, Reb Chanina is already on that level. Even now, he has the charuv. From Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, that's the world he lived. He's already living in the world of Chad Charuv, or Trei Charuv. Meanwhile, the rest of us are far from that point yet. Iyun Yaakov points out, by the way, that we had at the top of the Amud, does Mesubolim refer to the fact that these high-level tzaddikim do lots of mitzvahs, or that they have lots of yisurim? So the two opinions over here can reflect that. According to the first opinion, we're focusing on Mesubolim, that they live comfortable lives, and they accomplish tremendous amounts of mitzvahs. And according to the second one, we're saying that they have tremendous yisurim, just like we're saying over here, that they live very poor, they live very poor, needy lives. But the Gemara says, "Pliga de Rabbi Yehuda." Now, both of these explanations, either of these explanations, assumes that the Abirei Lev are very high-level tzaddikim. So again, abire means very powerful. They're very powerful high. They're very powerful tzaddikim. Where they have powerful schosim that help for themselves or for the whole world, as the case may be. That disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda's explanation, because Rabbi Yehuda fakert understands that that the abire leiv fakert means low level reshoy, because the word abire leiv can also mean stubborn hardened people. So therefore, Da'amir Rabbi Yehuda, man abire leiv goyvai tipshoy. Because Rabbi Yehuda says the abire leiv of that pasuk, where the Navi is telling them you better listen, that refers to the foolish goyvoi. So who are the goyvoi? So Rashi says they're a nation who lived in Babel. The Gemara in Kedushin tells us that they were descended from the Nisini. And Amr of Yosef, Teda, Dahoma Olam, Lo Igayer, Chad Gyer Minayu, you can see what fools they are, that there's never been a single Ger from that nation. If they weren't so stubborn and so foolish, they would realize the greatness of Yiddishkeit, and you'd have at least individuals from that nation that would become Ger. Now, so Maoshah points out that if these people are Nisinim, then one second, weren't the Nisinim themselves, didn't they actually become Gerim at the time? Where the whole thing, they tricked Yeshua, they tricked the Jewish people, and they became Gerim. So what are we talking about that nobody became Gerim then? So Maharshal says, okay, what it would have to be is that they'd have two names. They're called Gevai because they came from the Givonim. And then the Gemara in Kiddushin mentions there were two different groups over there. There was Gevai and there was Durnissa. So the Gemara explains over there the Gevai are so called because they're Givonim, and Durnissa is called that because they're Nisim. So Maharshal says, okay, you would have to say that then they went by both names. So still though, what does it mean that nobody became Gevim from them? So Maharshal says like this. To begin with, when the Givonim first became Gerim, not all of them did. Many of them did, and they were the ones who became the Chot Ve'etz and the Shoyim Emayim, but then there were others who did not. And they kept the name Givonim. So the ones who converted were called Nisinim, because Shenos and David Vasarim, because David, first Yeshua, and then later on David reconfirmed it, that they were going to be Chot Ve'etz and the Shoyim Emayim, and they were called Nisinim. They're not the ones we're talking about over here. We're talking about the ones who all along remained Goyim. They only accepted the Shevet Mitzvot B'nei Noach. So now we're saying of them, they're fools, because not one of them ever became a Ger. According to Rashi, who doesn't make that distinction, Maharshal says you would have to say that apparently at some point some of the Nisinim went back to being Goyim. They gave up on Yiddishkeit and went back to being Goyim, and their descendants never bothered ever becoming Gerim again. Either way, we're saying that they're the Abirei Lev, according to the Yehuda. Similarly, Omer Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi says in the same vein, V'holin b'nei Mosim Achasya, similarly, the Goyim in Mosim Achasya, which is where Rav Ashi's yeshiva was located, Abirei Lev Ninhu, they're also an example of these Abirei Lev, of these stubborn Goyim. D'hoko chozu b'shvacha d'araisa t'rei zimni b'shata, because they see the glory of the Torah twice a year, during the Yarche Kala, they come during Adar and during Elul to hear the halachas of Pesach and the halachas of the Tishrei Yom Tovim, respectively. So twice a year, they see this tremendous gathering of Jewish people and the glory of the Torah that there is there. And yet, not one of the Goyim of Mosim Achasya has ever become a Ger. So we see that they're also the Abirele. Tosfos mentions another point as well. Not only is it that they see this tremendous gathering of Jewish people, Tosfos brings from Rabbi Yehuda bar Barzilai, who's an early Rishon, wrote an important sefer called Sefer Itim. He says, he brings from the Goinim, from the early Goinim, that when they had these Yarche Kala, when they had these tremendous gatherings of the Jewish people to learn these halachas during the Yarche Kala, there would be a pillar of fire that would come down from Shemayim that would hover over them. And still, so these Goyim and Mosim Achasya are seeing that, and still not one of them is motivated. This is a nation that I want to join. Therefore, Rav Ashi says that's also what we mean by Abirei Lev. So in other words, we expect, Poshet, you think about it, what the Gemara is telling us over here is, you have the Gemara in Pesachim that says why the Eibishter sent the Jewish people in Golus, Kadesh Yitvas, while they engage him. The expectation is, as Jews are living in a place for a period of time, it should be that we have enough of a virkung, that we have enough of an effect on the local Goyim, that some of them are motivated to become Yidden. And if not, then either it means that we're falling down on the job, or it means, as in the Gemara over here, that they themselves are Abirei Lev, that they themselves are stubborn and foolish people, and they're not getting the message.
And they had a common language.
They had a common language, yeah, too, yeah.
They didn't have
until they went to go. This is also true, yeah. Okay. Mishem Nesei Perek Shlishi. So the focus of this parak, the third parak, continues talking about the dinim of Kriyishma. The first part of the parak focuses on the dinim of Misha Mese Mutalafana. A person's relative has passed away and he hasn't yet buried him, so he's an oinin. So what are the dinim of him as far as Kriyishma? And then it goes on to talk about the dinim of Kriyishma for shomrim of the body and for the people who are joining the Levaya and so on and so forth. So that brings the Gemara into discussing various issues having to do with Mason. So the Gemara says, Tanya, lo yahalach odim avesach. So part of what the Gemara is discussing is that we're saying that a person, misha mason mutalafanim, is potter from kriyishma and tefillin, but don't you have anyway, the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a braisa, lo yahalach odim avesach baris, a person should not go in a cemetery of tefillin b'roshe v'sefer Torah b'zroi, while he's wearing tefillin on his head uncovered, or while he's holding a sefer Torah in his arms, v'kode, and he's reading from the Torah, v'im oisakein, and if he does, over mashem loyeg l'rosh chedef, I say who, then he's being over on what the Pasuk says, the one who makes fun of the poor is mocking the one who made him, meaning the Mason are considered poor because they can't be doing mitzvahs anymore. And now you're going over there and showing off your mitzvahs to them and saying, so to speak, like you're saying, haha, I can do mitzvahs and you can't. So therefore, so you can't do that. So the point is, the Gemara says, so what's the point of mentioning about that he's potter from Kriyishma, if anyway you can't say Kriyishma with him? And so the Gemara explains the difference between within four Amos and outside four Amos. So this thing about Tefillin or Sefer Torah is only within four Amos. You also have, by the way, Bechlal, you have dinim in that connection about davening and a Beis HaKvaris. But again, first of all, if you're davening, if you're saying tefillas that are among other things for the kavod of the mesim, such as minor loshen, then that's fine. But another point is, this is also in the case of the oil, this is why they have the big tub over there in front of it, so that way you have a mechitza between you and then therefore it's not as much of an issue. Bechlal, you have, there's a piece that we say in minor loshen, there's a piece from the Zoya over there, it's also related to these days Tanya, that tzaddikim b'misal, the Gemara is actually going to talk about it soon, tzaddikim b'misal Kruyim Chaim, and therefore really this whole issue of Loyeg L'Rosh does not really apply so much to tzaddikim, but regular people, then yeah. The Gemara goes on to say, Tanan Abanan, Hamoylech Atzomes Mimokim L'Mokim, if a person is carrying bones of a mess from one place to another, he's not allowed to put them into a disakia, which is a double bag. Disakia comes from two words, diu, which means two, and sack, which means a sack. I once heard, as a joke, by the way, somebody said that must have been the last word that was said by the Tower of Babel before Hashem scrambled all languages. You see that so many languages have the same word for a sack. Anyway. So the disakia then is the way you would put on a donkey is you would have a double sack. They're connected together with a buckle or something, and you'd have one hanging on one side and the other hanging on the other side, and that way it's not overburdening the donkey. So you're not allowed to put the bones in a disakia, v'yitnem agav chamor, and put them on the donkey, v'yirkav aleihem, and ride on them, sitting on top of the bones, because that's treating them with bizoyin. You can't treat the bones of a mess that way. But if he's afraid of goyim, so he has to ride as fast as possible, or he's afraid of listim, of robbers, then mutter, then he would be allowed to do that, because then it's not a bizoyin for the bones. And the Brais continues, the same rules that apply to bones apply to a Sefer Torah, and the Gemara goes on to explain what it means is primarily the first part, that you're not allowed to sit on it. It applies more to the second part, that if there's listim or goyim, then you're allowed to do differently than you would. Now, you have machlokas apostkim, what exactly is allowed at that point? The Rambam says when you're riding on an animal holding a Sefer Torah, you should be holding the Sefer Torah in your lap. If there's goyim or listim, if there's a problem with goyim or listim, the most you're allowed to do is put the Sefer Torah, sling it behind your back, and carry it that way, but absolutely not to sit on it, even if it's a problem of goyim or listim. And then there are other posts can discuss that and say maybe not necessarily so. There is, by the way, a different halacha that meant that it talks about where you can have a case where you have to save a Sefer Torah, you're actually allowed to wrap yourself in it. You wrap the ureus around yourself, literally like a shirt or something, and do it that way in order to save the Sefer Torah from bizoyim. So that at least maybe you have a het or two, but to sit on the Sefer Torah, even if you're running away from goyim or listim or whatever, not necessarily. The Gemara continues, Omer Rach va Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Kola Royas a mess ve'enim alavehu, if a person sees a mess, if a person sees a levaya and he doesn't join the levaya, over Mishum Loyig Larosh Chayra Faseu. Then he's over on the same thing that we just said. He's mocking the poor, the mess, and by that he's making fun of Hashem who created. Meaning, in other words, Marusha says like this: we know that Gemilas Chasadim with a mess is Chesed Shel Emes. So, like this, when a person doesn't join a Levaya, it's as if he's saying, "Well, you know what? This guy is not going to be able to pay me back anyway. Even Hashem is not going to be able to pay me back. So, why should I bother?" That's the Chayra Faseu. Iyun Yaakov points out another point about it not Iyun Yaakov, but Anaf Yosef says like this: when you join in a Levaya, you're demonstrating that you believe that the Neshama still continues to exist and one will come back by Tchias Mason. Otherwise, if you don't believe in it, yeah, why bother with a Levaya? The body's dead, fine, now you dispose of it and have done with it. So the very fact that you join the Levaya shows that you believe in Tchias Mason, and a lack of doing that shows a lack of belief. And the Gemara continues, right? If he does join in the Levaya, what's his reward? The Pasuk says about such a person, the one who lends to Hashem is the one who's doing kindness for the poor, and the one who honors him is doing kindness for the needy. So Rashi says two possibilities. One is that it means that if a person is choin and dal, does kindness for the poor, and the poorest person is the mess who no longer can do mitzvahs, then so to speak, you're lending Hashem. So therefore, you get a schar as if you were lending money to Hashem. The second explanation is malva meloshen levaya. So when a person joins in with the levaya, lames, then Hashem will give him then malva. If he joins in the levaya, Hashem choin and dal, then Hashem will give him, that person who joined the Levaya, Chanina will give him grace. Okay. Actually, we have a few more minutes. It's for 25, rather. Yeah. Okay, so we have a few more minutes. Doesn't matter the difference, what? Make any difference who the person is, the Russia? Lechora not. I mean, so the truth is, there's a Gemara in Ksubas that talks about how many people you need to have by a Levaya in order that at that point you can say, we have enough, we don't need more, we don't need to be Mevatel Talmud Torah for it. So the Gemara discusses whether there's a difference between a person who did mitzvahs, a person who learned Torah, a person who taught Torah, where you have Lamanda Mas, you have a person taught Torah, there's no limit, no matter how many people there are by the Levaya, it's always appropriate to be Mevatel Torah in order to join in his Levaya. But you have different levels over there of different numbers of people. At any rate, you always need at least a minion. But yeah. So the Gemara continues, Rab Chia and Rab Yochanan have a shakli v'azli b'vesach boris. One time Rab Chia and Rab Yochanan, and Rab Yonasan rather, were walking through a b'vesach boris. Have a kashadya tchelte de Rab Yochanan, Rab Yonasan. Rab Yonasan's tzitzis were dragging on the ground. Omele Rab Chia dalye, so Rab Chia tells him, pick it up. It shouldn't be on the ground. You don't want the mason to say, look at this. These people soon are going to be by us. Eventually, they're going to die as well. And now they're mocking us and saying, ha ha, we have tzitzis and you don't. So it's not appropriate. Now, Mephoshim point out over here, Bechlau, Iyun Yaakov points out, Bechlau, you're not supposed to have your tzitzis drag on the ground anyway. So what are we saying? Only in a basic chorus is there a problem? So one thing is that there's a difference between in those times when they wore tzitzis on their regular garments. Their regular garments had four corners and they put tzitzis on them. So therefore, you can't expect that a person should take off his clothes when he's going to the Beis HaKvaris. So therefore, fine, let him have the tzitzis on his clothes, but at least they shouldn't be having drag on the ground. And the rest of the time also, if they drag on the ground, it's not as big a deal because it's part of his clothing. Mashenkin, nowadays we wear a talis cotton or a talis gadol, especially for the mitzvah. So then it's not appropriate to have the tzitzis drag on the ground b'chlal. And then when it comes to going to a Beis HaKvaris, you either have to remove them or, as we generally do nowadays, you tuck them in. So, and that way you're avoiding this problem of loyig l'rosh. So Omale, so Rabbi Yonasan says, what's the problem? Umiyadi kulehai, do the mason really know that much anyway? Doesn't a pasuk say the dead don't know anything? So they don't know. So what do they mean? They're going to know that our tzitzis are on the ground and they're going to object. Omale, so Rabbi Chia tells him, im korisa, you may have learned Tanakh because you learned this pasuk in Kehelas. Lo shanisa, you obviously didn't review it. Otherwise, you would know it better. If you learned it a second time, you obviously didn't learn a third time. And if you already learned it three times, obviously they didn't explain it to you well. Once you understand what the Pasuk is saying, you'll realize that it has nothing to do with what we're saying. Now the Pasuk goes like this. And then the Pasuk continues on. So kiyachayim yodim shiyamusu. When it says the living know that they're going to die, elu tzaddikim shab misasim kruyim chayim. This refers to the tzaddikim. Even after they die, they're still called alive. They're still called alive. So they know that eventually they're going to die. So therefore, they're careful to stay away from averus to begin with, and therefore, so they're called chayim because even after they die, they're still called chayim. Shenema, as we find the pasuk. The pasuk is listing, the psukim are listing over there David's various mighty men and heroes in his army, the top echelons of his officers. So it mentions Benayahu ben Yehoyada was the son of a living man. There's actually a kri uksiv over there because you have the ksiv over there is chai, and the kri, the way we actually read it, is chayil. So it was ben ishchayil, a mighty, valiant man. Rav Ta'olim, who accomplished tremendous things, Mikavtzel, simple meaning of Kavtzel, it's the name of a city in the territory of Shevet Yehuda. Hu hikos shnei ariyo Moyav. The pasuk says he struck the two powerful lions of Moyav. Vuhu yorad vehikos ariba sechaburbi emasholag, and he went down and killed a lion in a pit on a snowy day. So now the Gemara is going to douse him phrase by phrase about these accomplishments of Benayahu ben Yehoyada and what they really mean. But the first one is Ben Ishchai, Otter Kulam of Nemesininu. So what is everybody else the son of a dead person? Why is there a ksiv over there, Ben Ishchai? Ella Ben Ishchai, Shafila Bemisase Koruchai. Means this is the kind of person where even after he dies, he's not only he, but also his father. So earlier in the Masechta, we had when it mentioned Benayahu ben Yehoyada and Yehoyada ben Benayahu, and it said we explained, Tosfos explained over there that Benayahu ben Yehoyada's father was the head of the Sanhedrin. So therefore, Benayahu now can be described as Ben Ishchai, the son of a person where even after he passed away is still considered alive. So therefore, we see this is an example of Tzaddikim Mimisasim Kruim Chaim, which connects very directly with the Tanya that we have these days. And then we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with more of this Durasha. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ula, Yud Beis Cheshvan. People ask, that I've said, what's the world going to say and what are the Goyish nations going to say that we're trying to do, that we're doing the Avodah of Yefutza Manisecha Chutza and we're bringing closer the Geula Amitis Vashlema? They didn't understand what all that's about. They understand maybe that's a very tremendous, great Avodah, but people are going to say, don't you have to consider how the world understands things? How can you be doing things that they don't even have any clue of what this is all about? So the answer is, that I've said, the world is already ready. When a yid does the avodah the way it's supposed to, l'maylam b'didav akbala, beyond any limits and beyond any boundaries, and still within as melubush in the kalim of lubush ha'teva, he does it in the natural way with the kalim of the world, but he still does it in a way, in an unbounded way, he will see that in fact the world and the nature of the world and the nature of the Goyish nations are going to help him with his avodah. Halachas, talking further about the halachas of brachas. So we talked about last time that if a person is eating pasabah b'kisnin, which we said there were a few different definitions what that is, then if a person eats a shiur kriya suda of it, then he has to wash and make hamotzi and the whole nine yards. We said a few possibilities. It can mean a pie that's filled with certain kinds of fillings. It can mean dough or cake or whatever that's made with fruit juice or whatever. So now, how do we figure what's a shiur kviya suda? We don't go according to the individual person, we go according to most people. However much people usually eat for lunch or evening in order to fill up. If a person eats that shiur, even if he himself is not full, then it would still have the dinim of bread. And you'd have to wash for it. He brings over here, the Alter Rebbe says in Shulchan Aruch that the amount would be omer lagogolos, would be a shiur challah for two sudas. One second. And then in the Siddur, in Seder Birkas Hananin, the Alter Rebbe says that anywhere between six average size eggs, and that would be, then you'd first say Hamotzi on something else, and say Birkas Hamazon to be Motzi, to be Yotzi L'Divrei Hakol. If it's between four and six eggs, then you'd say Mezonis and Alamichya, and if you're full, then you'd wash and say Hamotzi and Birkas Hamazon, and if it's less than four eggs, then you should say Hamotzi on other bread. One practical example of this, they talk about pizza, for example. Generally speaking, Rabbi Marlow said back in the day, Allah Shalom, that if you eat two slices of pizza, that's enough to be a kriya suda, because most people will consider two slices of pizza a full meal, even though you yourself might eat three or four, but most people will eat two, and that'll fill them up. Therefore, you'd have to wash for it.